You're listening to the Power Word Gold Podcast, bringing you the latest tips, tricks, and strategies for making gold in World of Warcraft. I'm your host, Flux, and now, on with the show!
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Power Word Gold Podcast, episode number 20. It is Friday, the 30th of September, 2011. I'm your host, Flux, along with our co-host, Fade.
Hello.
And today we are just going to do it. We're going to get right into it. First off, though, Fade, do you want to let people know how they can get a hold of you?
I'm Fade. I write the blog Nerf Fades, which is nerffades.blogspot.com. Pretty sure I'm in the gold blog directory. I'm also on Twitter at Fadetastic. YouTube is Fadetastic as well, so all in all, it's pretty easy to find, but gold blog directory, find the blog.
You have some new stuff. Maybe, did you talk about it last time? You want to talk about your other blog and your other YouTube channel that you have?
Yeah, I just made a second blog. Basically, I play a lot of games, not just WoW. And I was uploading all these videos onto my YouTube account that really have nothing to do with WoW gold making, and I felt kind of bad that people were getting these subscription updates for videos that they might not care about. So I split off into two YouTube channels, one that's WoW gold making, the other one that's WoW non-gold making and other games. I've got some Penumbra, some Dead Island, etc. up there right now. And so I made a blog for the channel as opposed to a channel for the blog like my previous setup. And it's just basically me talking about whatever other games I'm playing. So, and that's Fade Plays. Fadeplays.blogspot.com.
And the channel, the YouTube channel is also Fade Plays.
Correct.
Awesome. Yeah, I've enjoyed watching those videos. You had some Minecraft videos, like you said, Penumbra videos.
That's where my Minecraft Let's Plays are going to be now, and I'm actually looking at getting some more Penumbra up very soon. We've been taking a break because of all the new Minecraft releases, but getting back to Penumbra this weekend, actually.
Yeah. I'm glad that Minecraft started updating because I had done as much as I thought I could do in it up to that point. After I finally bought it, or my wife bought it for me, so she's like, "So have you played Minecraft?" I'm like, and then finally they came out with 1.8, and I'm like, "Yes."
So it's pretty much what I did with Rift. I'm like, "Oh, I'm so hooked on this game. We should play Rift now." And so we got my boyfriend and I each got 3 month subscriptions, and as soon as we were paying for it, okay, let's go back to WoW.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun in Rift the first month, but it was. For every MMO, no matter what I've played in the last 6 years, it's always been a matter of, will I play it after the first month? And Rift got really close. I think the only other game that's I've enjoyed as much, but I still didn't pay for after the month was Warhammer Online when it came out. So, all right. I'm Flux from Powered Gold. You can find our blog at poweredgold.net. We're on Twitter at Powered Gold and facebook.com/poweredgold. And again, we're also on Google Plus. You can find that link on Powered Gold, and we're on Reddit r/WoWGoldMaking. So that's awesome place to go. All right, let's just go ahead and jump right into it, Fade. No willy-nillies this time. Let's talk a little bit about what types of things were added to information that came out about Epic Gems since my last podcast, which I had to do, which I did by myself based on my own stupidity. But at that point,
I was going to be there. I was going to.
So for everybody that heard the last podcast, I didn't say who I like shafted, like as far as not showing up. It was Fade, so.
Yep. I was up all night just waiting. I had my little podcast headphones on. It was up till 7 in the morning.
You're like, is he dead in a ditch?
I was like, he's missing a podcast? Something must have gone wrong.
Oh, he must have went to the movies and watched Contagion. But I mean, it's the first time we'd went to the movies for a long time. So I wanted to go see Drive, but everybody, I was doing a Skype. No, it's not Skype. I was doing a Google Plus Hangout with just on my personal Google Plus account for people that don't know the one that I have on the Power Word Gold. The lowercase is not my personal Google Plus account. It's my blogger, or it's for blogging. So anyways, I was talking to some random blogging / podcasting people on a Google Hangout, and I'm like, I want to go see Drive, and they're like, no, don't go see it. The best thing about that movie is the credits when they grow. And I was like, I know that I'm going to probably like love that show. I loved movies like Collateral and Miami Vice with Michael Mann, and I've heard it's similar to that as far as a stylized kind of movie, driving movie, action movie kind of thing. But we went and saw Contagion instead, so I got all freaked out about people touching everything.
Ever since playing WoW, I don't have the attention span to watch a full-length movie unless I absolutely have to. If it's a horror movie. I like horror movies. So.
Do you love cheesy horror movies?
I can. I don't discount any genre until I've seen it.
We saw Record and Record 2 recently. We rented both of those at the same time, and that was...
Is that a zombie movie that's kind of in the stance of... Well, not necessarily a zombie movie, but it's kind of... it's told from the point of view of a reporter.
Yes. Have you seen...
That's actually a Portuguese movie. I don't know if you know that was a remake.
No, that's the one we watched.
Oh, you watched the Portuguese version?
We saw Quarantine
in
the past, and then with the girl from Dexter, and then we saw... then we actually ended up watching... I think we watched Quarantine 2, but yeah, we watched the I thought it was French, but maybe it's Portuguese. Not French, I thought it was Spanish. But anyways, yeah. The original is the best, and then the second one is an exact takeoff of that one, and I thought it was all right, but it wasn't as good as the first one. But
yeah, most people I know who are like, Quarantine's so good, and I'm like, have you seen the original? And they're like, no, and I'm like, oh, well, I haven't seen Quarantine, so we kind of have something to talk about, but not really.
Yeah, well, you know, the one from the second one in America was a completely different movie than the one in the original sequel. America took it and like took it onto like an airport or something, or a tarmac or anyways. So,
and that's how I make gold in WoW.
Exactly. So, the changes that have come in that we've learned about since our last podcast was that there were going to be patterns that were going to come into the game somehow for epic gems. So that kind of got rid of the thought that they might be soulbound. That was always a long shot, but and then there's so they're not going to be soulbound, and then jewel crafters will get these patterns, but how they get these patterns we're not quite sure. I think it's called the Tome of Burning Jewels. Does that sound right?
Yeah, I don't know if it's called that, but it's definitely a blue quality book, and basically we don't know where the book's coming from.
Yeah, it binds on pickup, so there was a little glimmer of hope. We did a post on this on Power Word Gold. We actually didn't do it the first day it came out. Like, it was, I think it was kind of the same. It was one of those things where I come home and Twitter and blogs are already like all over this. I think it might have broken possibly on the night that I was off seeing the movies or something, but or maybe it was Sunday night. But it's called, the post is called Breaking Down the Datamined Epic Gem Information, and in this post I kind of like spent more time going back over it. And one of the things to note about the, I'm just trying to find the name, it's called Tome of Burning Jewels, is that at least right now on the PTR, it's marked as refundable. So if it's bind on pickup and also able to be refunded, then there's a good chance that these will come from vendors. So I don't, and it teaches you a random item, it either teaches you a random gem cut or it gives you the pattern for a random gem cut. I don't know which one it does exactly.
I think the wording is that it teaches you a random gem cut.
Yeah, it says discovers a random cataclysm epic gem recipe. That was the only reason I wasn't sure. So yeah, you're probably right. And so I wonder if this is something that you're going to buy with. I posted that someone said that there's a chance you might be buying these with either some sort of currency, or possibly there was a jewel craft, or there was a crafting material that drops in the raid. I'm trying to find out what the name of it is. It's the new crafting material that's used in...
It's like essence of something, if I remember correctly.
we're so prepared. Yeah. Dragon Soul. Let's see.
I just got out of class, so if you want to talk about film and cinematography, I'll definitely talk to you about that. I'm prepared for that, but not prepared for this. I got it.
So, no. It's just one of those things where I don't... All signs right now are pointing to not having them purchased from Jewelcrafter tokens.
What makes you think that it's not specifically the token if you think it's going to be purchased from a vendor with currency? What's to keep it from being the tokens we already have, other than the fact... Because I've been thinking about it, and I figured that Blizzard probably doesn't like that we're stockpiling a ton of tokens. But that's really the only reason I can think of for them not to do it. So I see no reason that they wouldn't reset tokens or invent a new token.
But that you buy with a set number of the Jewelcrafter tokens?
Yeah, I'd probably peg it around 5 or so. But basically, I think it's kind of weird that they would put... It's been quite a while since they put that kind of stuff entirely within the hands of people who are killing raid bosses.
Mm-hmm.
Is basically just kind of my thought, yeah. Which makes me think that it's probably not a Ember kind of situation.
Yeah, I think it's... In the article I wrote, I kind of became of two minds for what the possibility of what Blizzard could be doing. Either they're making Epic Gems a little bit more exclusive to raiding and including the patterns and everything like that, which kind of smacks a little bit more of like what it was sort of like in Burning Crusade. Or they're... Oops, hold on a second. I'm going to take a... I got to stop for just
go for
a second.
It.
Hello?
Hi, podcast people. You like making some golden wow? Me too. Lux is away right now. Talking on his telephone. Just cleaning my keyboard.
Sorry about that. Are you still there?
Yeah, I am. No problem.
Okay. I was like trying to, I don't know if you've ever done this when you're on the phone, like, and you need to go, but you're trying to see if they're going to end the conversation short enough to where you don't have to let them know that you need to go do something else. So, okay. Where was I at?
I totally forgot. I know. I've been browsing Reddit. I'm like, ooh, pictures of kittens.
No. Okay.
We're talking about the source of Epic
Gems.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Okay, sorry about that. I had a little telephone call, so I'm a little bit... I forget what we're talking about. We're talking about where gems for... Where the source for the patterns for gems are. So when I wrote the article, I realized that there's these two options. Either Blizzard is trying to make Epic Gems and Epic Gem Cuts more exclusive to raiding, or take longer to get, and that... The only reason I say that is because Ghostcrawler was quoted as saying that Epic Gems, that it will take people a whole expansion or a whole patch to fill all their sockets with red gems.
I think it's important to remember that he said that at the same time he said the only source was raid drops, but since then they've data mined a transmute recipe.
Yeah,
so that may not necessarily be the philosophy anymore.
True. Yeah, so it was always a chance. But the other option, if it's not necessarily that Blizzard wants to make him exclusive to raiders, but just wants to allow raiders a little bit quicker way to get these epic gems. And I think we talked a little bit about this before the show, but I think that in the past, epic gems had come in like satchels or, you know, dropped in bundles. And hey, kitty. Hi. We're recording a podcast. Woo. Bundles or you know, and they always usually went to the raid leader or the guild bank, or I guess in the, you know, maybe rolled on, but usually they were always tried to be used for the good of the raid, or the good of the guild, whether it was a guild run. And I think that they're trying to make it a little bit more so that that doesn't happen, so that people that run raids have the chance to get these epic gems without anybody else stealing them from them, I guess you could say.
Yeah, because that is one thing Ghostcrawler said, was I think he said he wants it to be an individual reward. That's why they were doing the bag thing.
Yeah.
So, which I think is kind of stupid, but if that's what they want to do, that's what they want to do.
You don't think every boss you kill should have a bag that has a little gem in it that might be epic?
I think that an epic gem is a pretty stupid way to make me feel like I was individually rewarded. Spending an entire tier trying to gem one set of gear and then being screwed over when I upgrade one of the pieces that I gemmed is not a reward for me. So, yeah, sorry, rant.
No. So what would you prefer? How would you prefer epic gems to be done? Like, given what we've already seen, what would you say would be your preferred way to have it done?
My preferred way would just be to prospect pyrite. And no, that's not because I have a whole bunch of pyrite, but because it made it, I mean, gems are not just for PvE. I mean, that's why they're resilience cuts. What happens to the PvP players who only arena, who need their epic gems? Well, I guess need's a pretty strong word and could be argued, but why don't they get a chance at it? Why don't the casuals? I mean, a lot of people don't raid and they still want to have the best gear. I'm not arguing whether or not they should or not, because honestly, I think if you're not raiding, you don't need raid gear. But that's a whole nother argument. Basically, they've gotten everyone really used to being entitled to stuff. Just look at the new Looking for Raid system they're going to introduce. It's the absolute epitome of making everything accessible to everyone. And yet they're going to make gems really hard to get. I think it's really, really weird, and I don't think it's going to end up this way.
Do you think that maybe they'll use alchemists as exclusive way to get them outside of it, possibly? Just with maybe a one-day cooldown on it, so alchemists can make one epic gem a day?
It's possible. I mean, it seems unlikely, and I think that they will invent a new way to get them, even if it's just justice points to buy them, because gems are for jewel crafting. Why can't jewel crafters get them? Is just kind of my thing. Why are alchemists the only source for gems for jewel crafting? It doesn't make any sense. So that's kind of why I think that something's going to change. Then again, I guess I said that when Ghostcrawler said only from raids, said it was going to change. It looks like it has. So maybe I'll keep predicting the future and they'll be available to everyone.
Yeah, it's always weird to look at all these, what they say, mix it with the data mine in your head. Like, you try to like conglomerate like the possibilities, like the raid, you know, the gems will come from raids and the books will come from raids and, you know, so
it's just epic gems act as a slow nerf to content, or maybe a fast nerf. Basically, depending on how quickly you release epic gems to the population, that depends on how fast the content nerfs itself, because a raid in entirely blue quality gems is going to do a lot less DPS, heals, survivability, etc. Than a raid in fully epic gems. Yeah. So I can see why they'd want to slow down the release of epic gems and not just have everyone start a whole content with the best gems. But I don't think that it's going to be so rare that people who don't hardcore raid will have an issue getting
them. Either you need to raid or you need to have money to pay the price that alchemists or whoever is able to get them another way will be able to. Because if they did make them transmutable, then you can actually, you could transmute uncommons to rares and rares to epics. Like, there would be a way to upgrade, kind of like leather, you know, how leather works with scraps and then leather and then...
Then everyone's going to be a transmute master, which they should already be, but, yes. You know.
Yeah. Because, I mean, it'll matter if they have a cooldown, or they'll do what they've done in the past and make the cooldown be 24 hours first and then later nerf it to get rid of the cooldown altogether, to kind of slowly, like you said, slowly release it into the population.
That's another thing worth mentioning is right now, alchemists, from what I recall, only have one cooldown effectively, and they can use it for transmuting eternal air to fire. I don't know if that's an actual element transmute. Or they can do true gold, or they can do a wrath epic gem. You can't choose like one from each content, and by making, if they continued with this and gave us epic gem transmutes on a cooldown, then that would severely affect the price of true gold, because that's also the only source for true gold is an alchemist transmute.
And the same for volatile air.
Except air can be farmed elsewhere.
Oh, there's
only
true.
One source for true gold.
That's true. Yeah, I see what you're saying, that it could increase if everybody's doing. But then again, how will alchemists get the patterns for the transmutes?
True.
That's the part that I'm not sure. Is it just going to be, if it, it to me, it seemed like the longer the cooldown, the easier the patterns will be to get. So if there's like no cooldown, then they might drop in raids or something, or maybe world drops or something, which seems silly. I don't really think that would happen, but it could. If there's 24-hour cooldowns, you know, I've even speculated that they could be 1 week cooldowns, which seemed silly to a lot of people, but to me seemed kind of reasonable, because Dreamcloth is the same way, and I don't really see how Dreamcloth is that much or less valuable than an epic gem. But you know, that would mean that it would take a while for people to get epic gems into, and it would actually, if they separated the cooldown and made it, you know, 1 week, then it would take, that could take a whole patch to get reds. But
well, epic gems are more valuable than Dreamcloth theoretically, because every player, first off, I don't use Dreamcloth at all on Fade, because I'm prot ret, so it has no value to me from that.
You don't use it for your leg armors? For your spell
cloth? No, leather workers make that, not tailors.
For intellect? For heals?
I'm prot ret. I do have a holy spec, but I rarely do stuff.
Okay.
But basically, so I don't even use Dreamcloth while I use, not counting my meta, 16 gems in my gear right now.
Mm-hmm.
So that'd be 16 epic gems and 0 dream cloth needed by
16 me. 16 epic gems. How long does a patch normally last? 3 months, maybe? At least be relevant?
Mm-hmm. Sounds
so,
about right.
So about 4 to 5 gems a week you'd be getting? Mm-hmm. if you're using Ghostcrawler's math as far as red gems, that's red gems, so... I don't know. I think that there'll probably be a way, you know, either there'll be a way for you as somebody who has a lot of gold to get all your epic gems socketed the first week, or there won't. And mm-hmm. how that's going to have to happen, you know, what could possibly limit it to the point where you wouldn't be able to do it other than just supply and demand, or, you know, having some drops be, I don't know. It's confusing.
Well, previously what they've done is they've made the gems not necessarily so hard to get. You know, you can prospect stuff for them, you can transmute them, etc. But the patterns is what would take time, which led to people all having, okay, well, everyone's going to buy bold, brilliant, and delicate. So that's kind of how they made it kind of difficult to completely gem your gear, at least for me, because I highly doubt a lot of people buy all the tank cuts right away. But
yeah.
So I guess I kind of feel that they tried to gate the epic gem rush by making it harder to get them cut and usable, not necessarily hard to get the gems themselves. Mm. Well, now they're trying to make it hard to get the gems themselves, which I think is a poor decision. Compared to, basically, WoW players have this tremendous sense of entitlement, which I'm not saying I don't either. Mm-hmm. And they've, all through this expansion, they tried to take that sense away from people by making heroics hard at the very beginning of Cataclysm. And people complained. There was such a backlash that we've seen nerfs unlike any I've ever seen. They even nerfed heroic content last week.
Yeah.
And then they're also introducing the looking for raid content. Yeah. So you can do like 5-year-old mode raid. I don't know like how you'd explain how easy these raids are going to be, but it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Basically, they're making everything more accessible, everything easier. I'm not saying this is necessarily good or bad, but they're giving the WoW players a sense of everything is for everyone. And so the fact that they make these epic gems so much harder for certain people to attain, or only for the higher-end raiders, is ridiculous. Yeah, and I really don't anticipate it going through. Yeah. And if it does, there will once again be that massive backlash.
So. Until I, on one hand, I realized yesterday that the looking for raids system is targeted exactly at me. When I read more on how it was going to work, because they released information about it yesterday, more information, and it's like play school raid where it can be done with 25 random people. with maybe one person kind of knowing what they're doing and being the raid leader. So it's going to be current content. And the reason that this is exactly for me is that I'm a lapsed raider. I'm a raider in BC and Wrath of Lich King that stopped just because of the social network, or not the social connections I had didn't necessarily pan out, or I just didn't have time, or I took a break and I came back and I got behind. But the fact that I might be able to do a kill Deathwing before Cataclysm is actually done is kind of cool to me. It's kind of cool because by joining a random raid and being able to see the fight and kill Deathwing, I think is cool. But then again, that's because I would never have been, if they had kept up with what they did at the beginning of the expansion for how hard the raids were, I would have never been able to do the raids at all, even like after they were nerfed, just because of the mechanics of getting 10 people together on my same server to go in and do these raids and to know what they're doing. So I know for me, it's kind of a godsend because I might actually be able to play a lot more into these. And if you read more about how they're doing it, essentially you can kill the bosses as many times as you want. But once the first time you kill the boss that week, that loot drop becomes your loot drop for the whole week.
Mm-hmm.
And every time you kill the boss from then on, you don't get a roll, or you don't get a roll on any of the loot. That's how it's working. At least that's what I read. So people can pretty much farm. Blizzard said that you could use it to farm your alts through. You can use it to pick up other, you know, sets. The gear's
gonna.
You're gonna
get rep. Did they mention that? If you'd get rep for boss kills after your first.
They said you got. I don't know about rep. I know that you got a little bit of valor points for killing like a last boss, but I don't. You don't get it for any other bosses, and they're splitting it into two like sub raids, I guess. And it's only going to be the current content. So the Dragon Soul is going to be, I guess, two sub raids with four bosses each. And that's going to be the random dungeon. The gear, they said, could look different, not just have lower stats, but technically possibly look different. So there's
Which
a chance.
Would just be a recolor. Undoubtedly.
Well, that's true, but it sounded like it might be a little bit more different than that. But knowing Blizzard's economy of assets, that they'll probably just be some recolors. But I don't know. It's one of those things that Blizzard's way far from where they were at the beginning of the expansion. I think that they really turned a whole ton of people off from the game by making it harder. Mm-hmm. But how that relates to gold, that's a different story.
Well, it does, because I guess it does to me, because that's kind of how I'm basing what I think is going to happen with Epic Gems, because mm-hmm. I do think that they're very much related. So
yeah, so you think that I think you're probably right that we're probably making I've probably made more out of this trying to be exclusive, and I probably read too much into it, and ultimately Blizzard's going to just probably throw the gates open, maybe not right at the beginning, but maybe soon after they'll make it to where, you know, it'll be easier and easier and for people to get these epic gems. But as far as how gold making ties into that, it really, right now I don't see a lot of ways to make gold with epic gems, but that really depends on if alchemists have easy ways to do it. That'll obviously be one way that you'll be able to start making gold. The cuts I don't necessarily see making any gold off of necessarily. It's just having your ability to cut other epic gems will make you have a little bit more ways to sell your gems, but you're not going to actually charge somebody for like a cut, like come do bold, unless they're like super rare, which like I said, we've talked about, I don't think that they will be. So
one thing of interest though about that is with the alchemy transmutes, because there is a recipe for the transmute in the data mine, which doesn't necessarily mean it's going to go live, mm-hmm. but do we know yet what the materials are?
Mm-mm.
Because in Wrath, the epic gem transmute used some of the previous, or sorry, the rare gem, so it would be a Inferno Ruby if you were going to do the new red epic gem, and then it used elements, so that may instill some life into the volatile market if they go back with that.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense, because I was trying to, when I was writing my article, I was trying to figure out, was it just going to be, instead of three carnelians, now it's three inferno rubies, and instead of three heart blossom, it's nine heart blossom. So if they do maybe, like you said, the rares plus elements, then that could help. You know, I could see them doing like red plus, well, red has fire, blue has water, and yellow, red, blue. What are the main colors? Red, blue, and yellow. Yellow could be air.
Yellow did have shadow for it previously.
Oh, okay.
But of course, we don't have volatile shadow.
Yeah.
So
the, you know, we don't know what they'll use. I thought that at one point, going back to the little bit more, I speculated that it could also take an essence of destruction, which is the crafting material that's going to be coming out of the raid. But now that we've talked about it, I probably don't think they'll even go that. That would be like the most exclusive form if it also included having a piece from the raid. But
yeah, I mean, the embers that drop from the Firelands raid right now, still on my server, are going for upwards of 10,000 gold apiece. So no one's going to pay 10,000 gold for an epic gem.
Okay.
So,
yeah, I see.
Granted, we're
saying.
Not the most, you know, progressed server ever. But
all right. So, you know, for people out there that are looking at this and trying to figure out exactly what they should be doing for 4.3, I'm going to kind of give my recommendation I had given to a few different people and put in the thing. And what I'm going to probably be doing is just, because of the chance that transmutes might come in, I seriously doubt that you'll get a transmute for a red gem that doesn't include Inferno Rubies, at least. So my stockpile of Inferno Rubies I'm going to be trying to have for 4.3 is going to be about two times more than I originally planned, just to have them, not just to sell to as raws, but also to hopefully use to see, you know, obviously as more information comes available. But what would you recommend, it, if anything, Fade, for people that are kind of trying to get ready for these changes to do?
Well, stockpiling rare gems is definitely a good idea. And not, I mean, I know everyone loves Inferno Rubies, but other people do use other gems. I use a lot of yellows and off-color yellows. But basically, the reason that's so great is because even if the transmutes don't use rare gems and the gems end up only being these raid drop things that we were talking about, then everyone still needs Inferno Rubies. Because if we're not getting them somehow, they still need the rare gems. So
yeah,
you can't really go wrong there.
Okay.
I guess because I don't really stockpile or plan for patches, I never have like the best advice or solid advice, but the one thing that I'd probably say is please don't liquidate your pyrite ore stocks. It's dumb. Don't sell it for less than it's worth, because with belt buckles and true gold and the possibility that they may still put in prospecting, don't be dumb. You know, don't sell all of your stuff before anything's even written in stone.
Especially if you got it back when it was pretty cheap. I think a lot of people stocked up back when bots were a little bit more prevalent on servers. I picked up about, I don't know, 10 stacks of pyrite for 6 gold apiece, and I ended up prospecting them all at one point before, just because I needed gems for something. But like I said, I'm with you. I don't really stockpile a ton, but just, you know, because I don't know, rare gems are so cheap on my server right now. Like, they're going for, like, besides the reds, oranges, and gray, purples, they're going for like 3 gold a piece. So that's
our,
like,
ore is still pretty expensive, so our gems are still pretty high too.
Yeah. So, let's see. All right. Okay. So one kind of thing that's a little bit related to epic gems. And do you have anything else to talk about those, about epic gems, Fade?
Nothing in particular. I'm sure if asked a question, I could answer, but I can't think of anything.
Yeah.
Off the top of
so
my head.
My best advice to you is keep your eyes open, read MMO Champion, WoW Insider, read the gold blogs, and follow people like Fade and me on Twitter. And we have, even if we don't find the information first, we have a ton of great readers that will usually let us know when something important is happening. And you'll start to see Twitter kind of pop like popcorn and you'll start to see stuff going on. And you're like, why are all these people talking about this or that? And so, and that way you'll have the best information for 4.3. So there was a change that Josh DJX, thanks Josh for letting me know about this on the PTR that, last night he let me know that they seem to have eliminated the vendor price for Cataclysm, uncommon and rare raw gems on the PTR. So if you try to sell like a Nightstone or an Amber Jewel to the vendor, it will say the vendor does not want this item. And it, if you mouse over it while you have the vendor window open, it says no sale price. And this is only true. So far as we know, this is only true for Cataclysm gems. I've verified that Wrath of the Lich King gems and early vanilla gems, raw gems, still have a vendor price. So there's a chance that this is essentially the last nerf to Cataclysm gem shuffles to straight sell to a vendor. It's almost like raw Cataclysm gems have become enchanting materials and that they don't have a vendor price, and the price to sell them on the auction house is very, very cheap because they don't have a vendor price. And the only really thing that this changes, me and Fade, we were talking about the fact that if you're doing your stuff properly, you probably should never be vendoring. And I haven't vendored gems to the vendor for ages, but that's not to say, you know, one of the things that they did do was actually they increased the vendor value of cut uncommons from 75 silver up to around 93 silver. I'm not quite sure why they would increase the value of cut, maybe cut gems. But after patch 4.3, if this stays the way it is, in order for you to offload, like, say you have, like, I don't know, 1,000 Zephyrites that you just have no way to get rid of, and they're cheaper than the vendor price on the auction house, you're going to have to cut them one by one by one by one by one and then sell them all to the vendor, because you can't just sell them in 20 stacks like you can now. Most people are saying it doesn't really matter because you shouldn't be vendoring them anyway. But so on one hand, you won't be able to do that quickly after the patch, and on the other hand, it'll also make the prices for raw gems on the auction house deposits lower,
which is nice for people who sell Nightstone on the jewel crafting daily days and stuff. Because before, because there's so much competition on those days to get that Nightstone sold, that there's so much undercutting that I'd only post a couple at a time. Well, now I probably won't think twice about posting up tons and tons of Nightstone at once.
Yeah, I found the exact information about that, and I updated my post, and basically, I had it. Where is it? Hold on a second. There we go. I did a post on this called Raw Cataclysm Gems Can't Be Vendored on PTR, but I did an update on the bottom that kind of gave some prices for the raws, and the vendor price the auction house fees for a 48-hour used to be 30 silver for uncommons. That's what it is on live, and now it's only 1 silver on the PTR. And then a 48-hour listing for a rare Cataclysm gem used to be 1 gold 92 silver, and now it is 1 silver. So they pretty much reduced the posting fees, which brings it a lot more into line with what posting fees are for enchanting mats. And that's one of the things that makes selling enchanting mats kind of nice, is that you don't have to ever really bother with losing a lot of deposits if your items don't sell, because, you know, the vendors don't want them anyway. This is just a small thing, not a huge thing, just a small thing to keep in mind. Like I said, if you don't normally vendor anything, you probably won't even notice this change. But I never underestimate the power of our readers or listeners to have crazy amounts of gems. Like, I've seen screenshots. People have sent me screenshots of their banks, and I'm just like, Okay.
If you do have crazy amounts of gems, don't vendor them anyways. You'll find a use, I promise you. Zephyrite's the only thing that you should possibly have crazy amounts for that you can't get rid of at a more profitable rate. And even then, if you're patient, you can get rid of
it. So what are some options that people have to get rid of their gems?
Well, the same usual shuffle stuff, making jewelry and disenchanting it, carnelian spikes, transmuting into rare gems, especially if we're anticipating them being used for transmuting epic gems. Mm. And then there's fire prisms, which may contain epic gems. We don't know that yet. Mm-hmm. Chimera's eyes. And then there's also the fact that anything other you do need Zephyrite for the daily, duh. The three daily gems, I personally leveled a Jewel Crafter just from, like, 1 to 450 or whatever it is, 525, a couple weeks ago, just so to have an alt Jewel Crafter. And I'm still doing the Jewel Crafting daily in Dalaran, which requires 2 of an uncommon level of gem. And on Horde side, they're pretty expensive, and I pay about 20 gold per uncommon Wrath gem because I'm too lazy to prospect on the Horde side. And so there is value. You have to be willing to find it and also be willing to wait if it's not the profit you want right now.
I would say that the main depressing factor on, not depressing as in, oh, I'm so sad, but like depressing factor on the prices of a lot of times of those gems is just that there's so many other people that have so many of them that are also trying to just offload them. So like you said, if you have other ways to utilize them, then you'll be a lot better off. So don't get rid of your pyrite and don't get rid of your uncommons.
I've never been a fan of getting rid of stuff if it's not valuable. It's like, even if it, like, if it's not valuable right now, what have you got to lose by holding on to it? I mean, it's not that hard to find a spot for it. Sorry, neighbor water. I thought they moved out.
There's a ghost flushing the toilet.
And they moved out like 2 days ago, but I think they're cleaning the apartment for people to come in. But okay, I think it stopped. Okay, it stopped. but yeah, I mean, really, if it's near valueless right now, what do you have to lose by holding on to it and hoping that the value goes up? Mm-hmm. The only time I can really think of, oh my god, liquidate everything, is in a sense, like, when... Can you still hear the water?
No. Well, a little bit, but only when you say something.
basically, like, for example, when they first nerfed the price of green quality gems, Frender, that's very on topic here, when that was being nerfed and people had tons of Zephyrite and everything stocked up, that would have been a good time to possibly look at getting rid of your gems. But if you're selling your gems for 75 silver a piece or however much they're going for now, just hold on to them. That's not even worth it.
Yeah, the price, I have it written down in this article. So right now, raws sell for on live 50 silver. Cuts sell for 75 silver on live, and then rares, raw rares sell for 3 gold right now on, and raw and cut rares sell for 375. So if for some reason you want to take 50 silver less and you have a ton of rares, like overstock of a certain color rare, it'll be easier to sell them before the patch than it will to be after the patch. So, all in all, you know, I know.
Think you should save them.
Says the person who has how many guild banks?
I've actually gotten rid of them because I didn't need that much space anymore. Oh, but basically, okay. I have 3 on Alliance, I think. Mm-hmm. Maybe 2.
Yeah.
But I guess, like, here's my example. It's Eternal Shadow. Near the end of Wrath, it was virtually useless. I mean, there were uses, but there was just so much that you'd get because there were so many people out farming Sarenite that I was picking it up off the auction house for like a gold per piece. Well, now no one's out there mining Sarenite anymore, but people still want it to make Titan Steel. I believe it's used in Titan Steel, which is then used to make the choppers. Mm-hmm. So I sell Titan Steel bars for 300 gold a piece, and I picked up all this Eternal Shadow for under 2 gold per Eternal.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And I sell it for 30 gold a piece now on the auction house. Or I use it to make Titan Steel and then to make choppers, etc.
Mm-hmm.
If an item has a use, chances are it will grow in value once the supply dries up, aka in the next expansion.
Okay.
So I think that if you're patient, you'll do just fine.
Yeah.
But you need to be patient. And if you're not, I mean, not everyone is, and go ahead and do what's best there, but my recommendation is patience.
Yeah, I think that the main issue is to try, if you have issue, like, say, overstocking, try to learn from that so that the next time something comes, you don't spend so much time overstocking, and you won't have that issue. Hold on to what you have, but then also try to learn from that and say, you know, I did probably buy, you know, 7 guild bank tabs worth of anything is probably what might be a little too much, but you never know. It might not be. So, all right, well, we're going to take a break here really quick. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about some of the cool stuff that Fade's been up to as far as blips.
So, okay.
We'll be back in just a second. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Power Word Gold podcast, episode number 20. I'm your host, Flux, along with our co-host, Fade.
Hello.
And we are going to jump into this last segment here and talk a little bit about glyphs. Fade, you had taken a little bit of a break from gold making at one point, but then came back. Do you want to talk a little bit about kind of what your impetus for coming back was and what you've been kind of up to, what you've experienced since coming back?
Yeah, sure. Basically, I hit 1 million gold and I made a little bit beyond that. I got up to like 1.3 million, gave some of it away. I was just getting bored with WoW and gold making. So I left for what was probably about a month, maybe more. And when I came back, I decided, gold making can be fun again. So I wanted to look at my old markets, which were pretty much, I did a little bit of everything, but most of my gold came from jewel crafting and glyphs. I wasn't really into jewel crafting at the time, so I looked at glyphs. The thing is that in my absence, a lot of people had moved into the glyph market, and usually this wasn't a problem for me, because there was competition before, and I'd just, you know, repost. I had the advantage of being around more often than anyone else. I had a lot of time on my hands, and I could be that guy who was camping the auction house all the time, and that's kind of how I got ahead. And that's still the case. I still have quite a bit of free time on my hands, but in my absence, someone else came along who was in the same boat. They seemed to have as much time as me, if not more time, to undercut me. So for about a day or two, we played a vicious undercutting war, 1 copper undercuts, for 10 hours straight. It was incredibly boring.
You have energy drink?
Yeah, it was incredibly boring, incredibly frustrating. And I said, well, what can I do to discourage this person? And the thing that, and they reminded me so much of the way I post. I'm like, well, what discouraged me? What made me leave the glyph market so long ago? And I thought, well, it was that one time that guy set a price ceiling. I think he set it at 35 gold. I'm like, well, I don't want to own a market, and I don't want to drive out all the other competitors, but I want to show this guy that I'm not messing around and I'm not new to this game. So, because, you know, as far as this guy knew, as far as I know that he knew anyways, I was completely new, and I wanted to show him, no, I'm not. So I started out with a small sample, but it eventually grew to every glyph in the game, posted at 30 gold or less. I'm posting between 22 gold and 30 gold right now, I think. Right now, if you go to Argenton US Alliance side, you can buy any glyph in the game for under 30 gold, and I'm keeping it that way. And it's actually been pretty interesting. A lot of people have come out saying, hey, that's really great, and even more people have come out saying, you're ruining the markets. It's actually been a really interesting experiment, and within just, you know, a couple of hours, I'd accomplished my goal of kind of showing the person, yeah, I mean business, but something else happened as a result. suddenly I was getting feedback, be it through trade, through whispers. I eventually made some blog posts about it and some posts on the forum. And I was getting, you know, a lot of interesting feedback from both sides saying, this is great. And other people saying, you're ruining the markets. You're a horrible person. And so it became less about making gold, less about selling glyphs, and more about, you know, gauging, judging, viewing other people's opinions of how to deal with a market. Because, I mean, we compete with each other all the time. And yet suddenly when we're talking about the concept of fostering a market, suddenly people are also worried about what I'm doing to my competitors and such. And I'm ruining the glyph for the other scribes. It's like, I was ruining the market for them before when I was undercutting them. Why is this any different? It, just because I undercut them much, much more. So it's gotten a lot of feedback. And so I've started keeping it up, not necessarily because I want to intimidate anyone. I've already done that. right now, it's more or less just to see what happens. Herb prices on my server have changed quite a bit, and yet they're still in abundance, which is nice. I've had, apparently the mysterious fortune card market has changed somehow. I'm not sure how. Apparently someone's trying to do the same thing I'm doing and is selling all their cards for like 3 gold per card when the previous average was 9 gold. I'm not really sure. I don't know the person. I've never really talked to them. But so the mysterious fortune card market's changed. Inferno Ink market has changed. It's gone up quite a bit because I'm now buying out all the herbs and no one else can make Inferno Ink.
When you say that the herb prices have changed, how do you mean, up or down or what?
The average price has gone up a little bit. Basically, it used to be the average price would sit at around, we'll talk Cinderbloom because that tends to be what I buy recently. An average price for Cinderbloom before it came back was around 22 gold. And for several weeks after I came back, it was 30 gold. Right now, we seem to be settling at around 28 gold. So herb prices have increased because I'm buying out all the cheap stuff, which is pretty nice. And it was actually kind of interesting because I have a whole bunch of blog posts explaining my reasoning, my findings, etc. And someone actually came in on those blog posts who plays on my server and plays a scribe and said that their business is booming. Like, this has actually improved their business. I don't really draw the line as to how, but they're like, yeah, now that prices are cheap, you know, more people are buying glyphs and I'm doing just fine. So it's been really interesting to see all the different ways that one person setting a price ceiling on an item can change like entire markets. And so that's basically what I've been doing with glyphs. It's boring. It's incredibly boring. And I think I did the math, and to every other day, I have to spend 1 hour and 10 minutes checking my mail and reposting glyphs. It's incredibly boring, and I wouldn't recommend it to most people, unless you're really bored, I guess, and don't mind being more bored. But it's been an interesting experiment. That's really all it is. I'm not sure how long it'll last. I kind of want to last a while, because a lot of people are like, yeah, I've seen people do this. They don't last more than a month. And it's like, I can see why. It's terrible. But, so I kind of want to see how long I can go, but at the end of the day, when I do drop it, it'll be like, okay, that was a fun game. Now let's go see what else I can do.
Have you thought of like cutting down your stock to get it to the point where it's a little bit more manageable, but still has the same, effect on the market?
The stock right now is 10 gold for, sorry, not 10 gold, 10 of each glyph, 30 gold or less. And I post 10 at a time, and I started out with 5 at a time, and I was running into problems because I don't cancel and repost at all, and I usually only restock once every day or once every other day, and with the 30 gold or less glyphs, suddenly demand has increased amazingly, so I'm selling all my glyphs.
Oh, okay.
I should say that's not true. I'm selling all of certain glyphs, like so, Unleashed Lightning goes so fast, of course.
Yeah, it's not necessarily that you have to take glyphs out of the mail, it's that you have to take money out of the mail, possibly. Because every mail is for every auction, right? One mail per auction, okay.
That, and also, like, for example, like, basically what I was getting at is we'll talk about Unleashed Lightning, and I'm going to think up a random one, Glyph of the Long Charge. I don't know how in demand that one is. But let's say it's not in demand. Mm-hmm. So you've got Unleashed Lightning, which has, which I might sell 10 of in 5 hours, but then you've got the Glyph of Long Charge, which I might sell 10 of in a month. Mm. Now, I could go through and figure out exactly how many I need of each, but that's just how to make the most boring activity more boring, in my opinion. So rather than worry about that, I just make 10 of everything. And I found, because I started with 5 of each, then 7 of each, then 8 of each, then now 10 of each. Mm. And I found 10 to be a pretty good spot to make sure that I never get bought out before I can restock.
Okay.
I was getting bought out at 7. I would occasionally get really close at 8, but I feel confident at 10 that no one's going to buy me out.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I used to do when I was doing glyphs a long time ago in Wrath of Lich King before Trade Skill Master or Quick Auctions or anything like that was auctioneer would show me there was a way to turn on, like, to show how many of a glyph you've sold in the past on the tooltip. And so I would actually use that to, like, start splitting my glyphs up into sections. And I wonder if there was a way that you could at some point start to analyze and see which glyphs you might want to split into a separate group that are only 5 at a time, like the less mm-hmm. known ones, or the less, the ones that sell 10 a month might be only 5. You might be able to cut down a little bit and have a separate category for them to post less of them.
It's certainly a possibility. It's a lot of effort. Then again, so is taking all the crap out of the mail every
I'm
other day.
I'm just thinking if you have one glyph and you have 5, you know, half of those. I'm always, that's the part of the thing that really fascinates me, is always analyzing how you can improve, how you can refine, how you can, you know, make it more efficient and stuff like that. So sorry, keep going.
Well, that was basically it. That's what I'm doing with glyphs right now. It's just, I'm playing with what I'm calling the 30 gold ceiling experiment.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, it's been really interesting so far. I've considered doing it on both factions, because I do have a scribe on Horde side.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have as much supply, but I could move the supply over easily enough because I have 2 accounts.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact is, I really don't have to spend that much time restocking. Really, the time investment at this point is just mail checking, because once you've created the stock, you really only have to make what you sell. And so I've considered doing it on both sides, but that's basically my only outlook, and I probably won't do that.
Have you thought about running 2 accounts on the same side to split your glyphs between 2 people so you can check mail at the same time on both accounts?
It is a good idea. Basically, what I was doing is, as far as I know, that I haven't found a way to sync TSM across both accounts, and so when I'm stalking, it's immensely easier to make sure that my scribe is also posting, because then I can know how many I have on the auction house. Well, what I used to do was I had Liquidate on my second account posting while my scribe on my first account was making them, and I'd have to mm-hmm. go through and do all the math, and it was just mm-hmm. a pain and a half. So that's why I don't have it split when I used to actually have it split.
Mm.
If I can find a way to sync TSM across both accounts, and I mean like real-time sync,
mm-hmm.
then I would definitely like to do that, but as far as I know, there's no way to do that yet.
Mm. Yeah, I know that at one point I was doing like mailings where you can like set up your mail, your TSM to mail off, automatically mail off certain glyphs to secondary or to people. So that,
yeah, I do use mailing a lot for getting stuff between the 2 accounts, but just it would just, the only issue it would create is restocking, but since that would be a pretty big issue, kind of would mess me up.
Would you recommend this type of experiment to anybody, or is there any gold making wisdom you can pull out of this for people that might be listening to the podcast and saying, hey, I might either want to try that, or how can I kind of do some sort of modified version of that? Do you have like kind of rough ideas about how much gold you would make if you're selling what the old prices were versus what you're making now?
Well, the old prices, granted, it was drastically different per glyph, but I estimated the other day, right now on the auction house, I have 100,000 gold worth of stock,
mm-hmm.
which is 10 of every glyph at 30 gold, between 22 and 30 gold. If I'd been selling 10 of every glyph, basically I used to stock 3 of every glyph for 33,000 gold. So
how many glyphs are there in the game?
I don't know.
Oh.
I actually was trying to figure that out.
Your trade skill master just told you how much you had on the whole auction house at once, money-wise.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm just sitting, I'm really poor at math. Like, I've made a lot of gold-making mistakes because of my poor ability at math. But correct me if I'm wrong, but basically that means I was selling 3/10 of my stock. You know, I had 3/10 of the amount of stock I have now.
Mm-hmm.
But I was selling it for 1/3. It was valued at 1/3 of the current value. Though then again, I didn't make every glyph. I only made the expensive ones. I honestly don't know. But I will tell you this, I'm making profit. So, but as for people who would consider doing this on their server, play around with it. Like, maybe make 2 of each glyph. See what happens. If it's something that you can see yourself doing, yeah, go ahead. But as for a legit way to get rich in this game, no, it's not. It's an incredible time investment.
Mm-hmm.
And though you will profit, it's not a smart way to profit, I guess I feel. You could get a lot more for the time invested by doing something else. Right now, the interest I'm getting in this, you know, what I'm getting out of this isn't gold. It's the experience.
Yeah.
That's why I'm doing it. I would not recommend this for people
if you
who want to make
gold,
lots of gold.
You can go make a character on Argentan US and go to the Alliance site and farm herbs, because apparently Fade will buy your cinder blooms.
I will. I don't only buy Cata herbs. I used to... any herb that I'm getting at 6 gold or less per ink,
mm-hmm.
I'm buying it at all levels. So
yeah, I've been doing a lot of... I run those 4 alchemists, and I've been doing a lot of Whiptail. I used to do a lot of Whiptail. When it's too busy, I'll go farm over in Vashir, and also like try to find some rares as I'm kind of working my way around. It takes a little bit longer, but I get a couple different, I think it's Azhar's Veil and Stormvine that comes.
That's and where I herb too on my druid.
One of those
swimming.
Yeah, swimming is awesome. One of those has a like... One of those is at 3 something on my server, whereas Whiptail's kind of stuck at 175.
On my server right now, Stormvine and Azhar's Veil are more expensive as well, which I really don't understand. I guess it's probably because it's harder to farm.
Less people farming it, possibly. Oldham is just... If it's a good day in Oldham, it is a really nice, easy way to do it, but I realize now that it might be worth a little bit extra time to farm over in... Vashir, just because of the increased value I'm going to be getting. Because to me, like, the herbs are a byproduct of the life. Mm-hmm. I don't like spending a lot of money in volatile life, because that cuts into my volatile air profits, and so I'm willing to spend a little bit more.
You might find a Poseidus.
Yes.
I bought one, by the way. I bought a Poseidus for 65,000.
Did you end up using that?
Yeah, I did use it.
Oh.
I felt really dumb. I went into the little moat around the portals in Stormwind.
Uh-huh.
I mounted up, and I'm like, I can see my head and the top of the seahorse, and I haven't used it since. You know, when I bought it, I knew I wasn't going to use it.
Well, you know, like I think the Gold Queen said that she used it in the fountain. When people are fishing in the fountain in Dalaran, she used it.
No one goes to Dalaran on my server. So
actually, almost all of my people now have their Hearthstone set to Dwarven District once they... Once they made only jewel crafting dailies, possibly, but
my jewel crafter is the only one who has their hearth set there.
I think anybody that sells pets, like the Dalaran pets, are still selling well, so I have one person on each side that's set there too for those.
Speaking of vendor pets, I've been selling the Dragonhawks out of the Blood Elf starting area to Alliance players for 500 gold apiece. How ridiculous is that?
That is pretty crazy. I've been selling on for anybody that for some random reason wants to send me in-game mail. Since Fade already said her server, I'm actually on her server. I have a character. Her name is Karanta. That's Keranta, and that's on Argentan US Alliance. If you want to send me an in-game mail, you can send it there. But she is a night elf, and so she's done is mining and jewel crafting and just questing, leveling, and she's at like 3,000 gold right now. She's level 58. The owls from her whole point was that she quested and leveled all the way in all Kalimdor. So her Hearthstone set, her Hearthstone is, you know, her home is in, she's a night elf, so her home is in Darnassus. And so, the market kind of can go up and down for the owls that they sell in Darnassus, but it's been as good as 55, 60 gold when there's not a lot of people selling them to down to 9 gold or even a little bit lower, but they're only 45 silver or something, so I'm making gold either way. But I was surprised at how much the mining materials went well. All the ores, and I had some bars and everything, have went really well from
level probably bought some
45 and 50. Funny that you mentioned the Blood Elf starting zone, because this character, Karanta, on Argent on US Alliance side, we're going to get people like, I just want to get people like starting random like level one alts and sending me in-game mail. If you send me an item to Keranta, I check that character about once, twice a week. And if you, we'll have a contest to see who can send me the strangest item in the game.
See, the thing is, now they have to farm up the gold to send you an item, because mail isn't free.
I know. Well,
it'll be a test of their gold making skills.
Yes, it'll be a test of your gold making. I remember a funny story about there was a time period where the Love is in the Air, the boxes that you would get for Love is in the Air, that had the chance to have like a silver shafted arrow, and I think they had a chance to have the picnic basket.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was a chance that they would drop out of the candy boxes that you would get. And the candy boxes were not soulbound, but the item you would take out of it would become soulbound. So essentially what I would do, I would take a level one human, I would run them to Stormwind, sell all the items that they had, buy Valentine's, and I would have another alt that I would give them cologne, so they'd put the cologne on and they'd go to like a guard or something, and they would do this really quick quest that would allow you to get like a certain number of tokens that you could then buy these candy boxes with, and then after they got the box, I would open it and look, and I would give it to my alt, and then I would destroy that character and make another one and do it over and over and over again, hoping that I would get those silver shafted arrows. So sacrifice of the level ones. They've changed it now so that you don't usually have to do that, but so getting back to what I was talking about, so someone can make a level one on that server and send mail. So but I started a Blood Elf, getting back to Blood Elves, and this is kind of one of those things that you'll start to, this is the kind of thing that you get like gut instincts for when you start paying attention to gold making in a big way. And when I started a level one, so this was a Night Elf alliance that was going to be all leveled through Kalimdor. So then I'm like, well, I want to start in a horde that's going to be leveled all through Eastern Kingdoms. So I started a Blood Elf rogue on an RP server and started leveling her over there. But when I was in the starting zone, I saw that the vendor had leather and cloth items, had this item called the sun cured legs, and they were leather items, but they look like really cool Blood Elf, like gold and red and brown, like Blood Elf clothes. They look like Blood Elf clothes. So I actually was like, well, I'm new on this server. Well, I wasn't new on the server, but I was like, well, how am I going to make gold on this server? So I started actually picking those up and selling those, along with selling the dragon hawks to the horde side. And the sun cured items were selling for like, they're white items, so you won't be able to use them for transmogrification. But being that it was an RP server, I can see a lot of people picking them up for RP. And they've been selling for 2.5 gold a piece. So I sold probably
only 2.5.
Well, I mean, I wanted to, you know, I wanted to keep it reasonable. So
I just say that because there's similar vendors as you go through the goblin starting area. Every time you like get to a new little camp, there's a different vendor that sells a different version of cloth, leather, and mail armor. Mm-hmm. And I bought all that, and I they're all starting area stuff, so it's copper and eventually some silver. And I sold every single piece. It took a month to sell, but I sold every piece that I bought for 30 gold apiece.
Hmm. Those are in the goblin starting area, so that gets phased out, though, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, the Blood
Elf.
But
as you're coming through, you can do it, and you can mail your stuff to
others. Oh, that's true. Yeah, I did that with Kujakula. Kuja Cola. I sell that for like, I've sold it in the past for one is like 11 gold. So, and you just pick those up. You can pick a, you can get a 20 stack and you pick them up all along. There's one part in the quest where you're kind of like going and you have to like basically rough up like a few different people. There's Kuja Cola like sitting around on the ground. If you go around and click on it, you'll collect it and you get, you can get a 20 stack per character and then you can sell it on the auction house. And when you drink it, it like has some random effect, like it makes you have a really cool idea, like
but they're really stupid ideas.
Yeah. So I always, on my goblins, I always pick those up. So there's lots of things you can do like that, but it's just a matter of, you know, thinking about something. Like I saw the leather items, I knew I was on an RP server, I knew that that looked Blood Elf and that there would probably be people that would buy it and buy the whole set. And that's something for when you're just getting started out, you know, making 2.5 gold here, 2.5 gold there actually can kind of add up. Like I said, my 58 has like 3,000 gold, and that's just not really, you know, that's just from knowing how to do auctioning and stuff like that. So, you know, I like doing those kind of things because it's a fun way to, you know, to learn and think about new ways of making gold and stuff like that. So, good times. Good indeed. Times.
I don't know how we went from, oh yeah, we did epic gems, then we did glyphs, and then somehow we got to starting area close.
Starting area close. Yeah. I'm just trying to think of if there's any other things like that in the game. I think that you might be able to buy a set of the starting clothes in, I want to say in the Caverns of Time, Calling of Strathholm. Not Calling of Strathholm.
Dernhold.
Yeah, Dernhold.
Escape from Dernhold Keep.
Yeah. Hillsbrad, I think, sells some versions of starting gear.
And while you're there, you can pick up the Rumsy Rum Black Label or whatever it's called that gives the stamina buff to Twinks. They love that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you do it on Heroic and you've never been there before, you can kill Don Santos and get Don Santos's famous hat. And then you can click on the hat. Not only is it a sombrero, but you can click on the hat and it'll have a wolf come out to be your...
And there's a merchant one running around that sells recipes, including the one for the riding crop.
Yes, all these things. All these things that you that you learn over time. Oh, man. This game is awesome, but it's also so huge, and it's also so, like, I've been playing it for 6 years now, and there's still things that I have no idea, like whole, like, horde areas I just have no idea about. I'm learning, but it's fun. It's good. So, all right, well, did you have anything else that you wanted to talk about while we're on the podcast, Fade?
Not particularly. The glyph experiment is pretty much what I've got going on my plate right now, other than the usual raiding and such.
I actually was going to ask, because I've noticed that I have kind of like a set things that I do, and people that have listened to the podcast long enough, when I would have a segment like what I'm doing to gold making, it seems like it's always been the same kind of thing over and over again. And I was just going to ask you, Fade, like, or here's an example. For me, like, my key things are volatile air, handful of obsidian bolts, inferno rubies, food. I still sell food, like the food from Twilight Highlands. What kind of things do you just have clicked on autopilot that you just do automatically, besides glyphs, that you do in your gold making routines?
Vendor recipes and pets. That's my big constant moneymaker. I do it on both sides because I play on both factions. And because I have two accounts, I made a video for this quite a while ago, which is just basically about where to go to pick up the cross-faction pets and cooking recipes. I do both at the same time because there's no reason not to. They're pretty much bought in the same spots. I move them across the auction house, the neutral auction house, and I sell them cross-server, and I sell them for an average of 85 gold per piece. But like I said, I get these like 500 gold for some of the pets and such. And that's kind of my main thing. I have a character, or my main constant thing, other than glyphs and gems and the usuals, if you will. I have a character set up specifically on each faction just to sell these. So I just log on every 2 days and repost. and like I think the Alliance side one, just this is all she sells.
Mm-hmm.
It's all she's ever sold, and right now she has 23,000 gold on her. So
do you have Trade Skill Master? You said, sorry, I got a text message I might have missed. Did you have, you said you had Trade Skill Master set up for all these pets to...
I think your text message or whatever kind of screwed up your audio quality. Are you asking me if I have Trade Skill Master for that?
Sorry. Can you hear? Does it sound good?
Yeah, it sounds okay. Fine now.
I was just going to say, like, I was trying to read the text message while you were talking, but do you have Trade Skill Master set up on those characters to automatically price all these and all that stuff?
Yeah, I do. I've got a list specifically just called Miscellaneous Vendor Recipes and Pets. For each one, and they just post them up. You know, my fallback's 85, my threshold's like 2 gold, because hell, I bought them for 50 silver or less, so no reason not to go down to 2 gold. And post them for 48 hours and forget about them, because they will sell. So.
What about ones like the Winter Spring Cub and the ones that are a little bit more expensive? Do you have a different category set up for them, like the ones from Dalaran?
I don't sell them.
Oh, okay.
I understand why people do, and I don't think it's a bad idea.
Yeah.
But it's just more than I want to spend. Because though I think they will sell, every time I post them, because you know the higher the vendor value for the item, the higher the deposit is, and thus these more expensive pets kind of annoy me. Like for example, I do hit up the vendor in Netherstorm.
Mm-hmm.
Which includes mana wormlings, which I think you buy from him for 50 gold, and I usually sell them for like 180.
Mm-hmm.
But the deposit on them is significantly higher than off of a rabbit or something of that sort.
Okay, yeah.
So when you are constantly reposting, because I mean the demand isn't that great, you'll sell them within a few weeks, but you might have to repost a lot, and it's just a little bit of gold that I don't want to lose kind of a thing. It's not that big of a deal because you will profit off of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not my thing to do the larger value stuff. The great thing about this for me is spending less than a gold to get 500 gold. And so that's why I like the cheap stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. And recipes, what recipes do you regularly do?
I'll name a few off the top of my head, but basically they're the ones that I pick up while I'm getting the pets. But for example, let's see here, beer-basted boar ribs, lock frenzy delight, or was that fillet of frenzy? One of them was moved to the trainer and one of them wasn't. pretty much all the recipes that are sold by the vendor in the Pig and Whistle and Stormwind.
Okay.
Tender wolf steak, which I think is the one that's sold in Gadgetzan. I always mix it up with a different, like, tender wolf kebab or something of that sort. Basically, any of these vendor recipes that are sold on my route. I have a video. I'll, like, give you the link so that you can put it in the link for the podcast notes and such, which basically outlines where to go and what to buy off of all the vendors that I hit. There's more vendors, but they're the ones that I hit, and I just move them over. There's also a vendor in Desolus that sells some cool stuff. But it's not one of my regulars because it's kind of a pain in the ass to hit that vendor because it pats around and it has a weird cooldown situation with it. Granted, when I do get a recipe off of that, I sell it for 1,500 gold.
Yeah.
Because no one knows where to get it. And there's never any competition. But
there was an engineering recipe I picked up, I think it was on my... I think it was on my Night Elf. It was somewhere in like... near Astronar or something. There was like, was that on my Night Elf? Maybe it was Stone Talon Mountains. Anyway, there was like an engineering recipe I picked up at one point from a vendor that kind of like you had to do a quest chain to get this recipe vendor unlocked, and he sold like a certain engineering recipe or something. I don't know if it's sold, but I do something similar, but I'll do it through Outlands. Like I'll hit like especially when I was doing transmogrification runs of like Serpent Shrine, not Serpent Shrine, but the dungeons like Slave Pens and Underbog and all that. But you'll hit, as on the Alliance, I hit Tel'Rador, I picked up patterns there. I would go pick up the patterns. I think there's some in Hellfire Peninsula as well, some of the vendor patterns over there. And then I have those all set up in a Trade Skill Master group. So again, it should be mentioned, if you're interested in these vendor recipes, get the add-on Gathermate 2, and then also look for one called Recipe Profit for Gathermate. And that'll put a little purple circle on your mini-map whenever you're in the vicinity of a vendor that sells a recipe. And when you mouse over the circle on your mini-map, it'll tell you what, I think it tells you what, who they are and what they sell. So that's good to just be like I was randomly flying through, as a when I was doing archaeology, I just do all Eastern Kingdoms, and I was flying through, Red Ridge, and on the west, I think, side of Red Ridge is a vendor that sells a couple leatherworking patterns. They're like kind of really far off in just this random little camp that's, by the little lake there. And so, and you know, just while you're doing archaeology, you can pay attention to your mini map and you see a little purple circle. If you have those two add-ons, you can grab the recipes there. So good times. All right, well, I think that that's gonna wrap it up. I am so excited that we got the chance to get our podcast, like I told Fade a little bit before this show, this is almost like an addendum to the last podcast because of my silliness. That's why we started talking about movies, because I was telling you why I forgot to last time. So, all right. Well, I think that that's kind of going to wrap it up for this episode of the Power Gold podcast. Fade, is there anybody that you'd like to kind of give shout outs to or anything right here at the end?
Basically, just any people who follow my YouTube channel or my blog. If I start naming any specific people, I know I'll forget someone, and I don't want anyone to be forgotten, so better not to start naming.
Awesome. And yeah, I'd like to thank everybody who reads Power Word Gold, listens to the podcast, especially people that communicate with us on Facebook or Google Plus, also especially Twitter, because that is our pretty much more our favorite way to communicate with the readers and the podcaster podcast listeners. And also, you guys have way more knowledge than like I have, so it's good that you share that with me. And so all right, well, I think that that's gonna wrap it up. Faye, do you want to kind of let people know how they can get a hold of you once again?
I'm Fade from nerffades.blogspot.com. That's with two Fs. I'm in the Power Word Gold blog directory. And then I'm on YouTube at Fadetastic. And Twitter, I'm also at Fadetastic.
Awesome. And again, if you want to find Power Word Gold, you can find us at powerwordgold.net, facebook.com/powergold, and Twitter at Power Word Gold. So I think that that's going to wrap it up. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Music for this episode of the Power Gold podcast includes Fool, What a Stupid Clown, and Incoming by the band Eglin. To find more from the band Eglin, head to jamendo.com, jamendo.com/en/artist/Eglin, Eglyn. All songs were used under the Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 2.0 license. To find more information about Creative Commons licensing, head to creativecommons.org.